The heart and soul of the Passover Seder is to identify as a Jew with the oppression that Jews have gone through, and how lucky we are through God's grace to have survived and to have flourished and to have changed the world according to God's intentions. All the four children are basically confronting, just as the four questions do before them, confronting the people at the Seder with the question of, like, why are you doing this? The answer is, it's not, we all are doing this. Please don't say you. Say, why are we doing it? Because we've suffered and we have been oppressed. And God chose us and rescued us so that that oppression means something. It changes us in terms of compassion, in terms of wishing for the freedom of everyone, to identify with that human right, whether it's people, women who don't get, aren't educated in Africa and the Middle East, to people in the Soviet Union, we used to hold the Refusnik Seders, to Tibetan Buddhists, to people who are homeless in America. Who is oppressed and unable to be free? Refugees, many people did refugee Seders this year. And as the ADL pointed out, the resolution before Congress right now, in the House of Representatives, is to change the way we evaluate refugees to make it stricter, even though there's never been a single case in American history of someone who's gone through the refugee process, normally which involves proving that you've been tortured, who has ever been associated with terrorism. And so these are people who have actually been oppressed, they've been tortured, and we wish for their freedom. So that the fact that we have been oppressed, it means something to God, and we make it mean something in this world by changing the world accordingly. So it's, please don't say, why are you doing this? What does this mean to you? Say, what does this mean to us? Why are we doing this? Because it helps us to fulfill God's mission. Then we go on to the 10 plagues, and we do the 10 drops of wine. And normally, this is the part where I say, the reason that we are going to be spilling drops of wine during the recitation of the 10 plagues is because we want to lessen our celebration. We want to take wine out of our cup of salvation and celebration, because we feel bad for the innocent who suffered along with the guilty during the 10 plagues. So I'll lessen my cup of celebration. We'll spill some drops out of it to remember those who suffered in the 10 plagues, especially the death of the firstborn. That is not the origin of the drops spilling or the drops taken out of the cups for the 10 plagues. It was quite different. The origin of that practice was that the oppressors of Jews still very much exist. And when we identify, we say, this is our people and this is our suffering. It's not that I'm different because this was my grandparent or great-grandparent during the Holocaust. So it's their suffering. It's like, my family suffering is my suffering too. My people's suffering is my suffering too. A Jew who lives in Sderot, who has rockets sent to them from Gaza, this is my family. These are my people. That's not just their problem. It's my problem. It's my suffering too. So the drops actually would be accompanied by curses for those who are still inflicting oppression on the Jews. So if you lived in a place like Baghdad, you would actually collect that wine in a cup. It's still done by many Sephardic, where they don't understand why you're putting it on a plate or a dish. You collect it in a cup, although most Sephardim don't do the what accompanies it, which is that after the leader would say the name of the plague, an individual was allowed to pour some of their wine into the special container or the special cup, and they'd be able to curse one of the enemies of the Jews. Let's say the Gentile mayor who didn't do anything when there was a riot against Jews, the evil chief of police who refused to defend Jews when they were beaten up by a gang, an exploitative business owner who cheated Jews. Whoever these officials and others were, they would be named after each plague. And then in Baghdad, you'd actually have a person designated to take that wine out and go to the front yards of the homes of those people and spill some of the wine onto their yard basically to curse them, to wish them a comeuppance for their oppression of the Jews. I wonder if we haven't lost something by focusing on the humanistic interpretation rather than on the motivation behind that original custom. I think that some of the anger that is coming out in the electorate who vote for Donald Trump or who vote for Bernie Sanders is actually a realization that the forces that operate against us can be blamed. Let me put this a different way. I've been led to believe my whole life, let's say you're a Bernie Sanders supporter, that, you know, you can't really send people to jail for the financial crisis. This has to do with the development of capitalism, the way markets work, and it's all very complicated economic theory and the way the law works and regulations work. Or if you're a Trump supporter, it could be that the issues of protectionism. The idea that trade deals cost jobs in America and we export jobs to countries that don't have any environmental or worker protection laws so they can pay people less and they can pollute their environment and hurt people in the process, that's inevitable. It has to do with globalization, and it has to do with the abstract forces of changing elements of history. I think that the Trump supporters or the Sanders supporters would say, no, there are actually real people behind those decisions. And some of those decisions really are unfair and they hurt people. I think that when someone who works for Countrywide knowingly makes tons of money because they grant people loans for houses they can't afford and financial instruments that the people don't understand. And so people are foreclosed on and they lose their homes and they become homeless people, which puts them in the category of the oppressed. That the idea that the suffering that person experiences in return is a smaller bonus, maybe a fine, maybe having to switch to a different firm so that the firm can say, well, we let those people go. That's not the people that need to be let go. The people that need to be let go are the people who are in oppression, let my people go. Let me make clear that when we're talking about comeuppance, we're not talking about comeuppance for every possible crime or every possible wrong or every possible sadness. The Torah has a very specific idea of what oppression means, and it's connected to the idea of someone who literally cries out to God. The Torah uses the word tzedakah, the crying out, specifically in cases where people are so thirsty they're about to die, where people have lost everything and they're crying out to God, workers who have been cheated of their wages, or workers who have been worked so hard that they're crying out from the hardships of their labors, people who suffer because they're not protected adequately by the systems of justice, whether it's wronged women and wronged children, has to do with the poor who are supposed to be allowed to eat from the corners and edges of people's fields, and yet the people don't do that. And so they're stealing from the poor, and the poor call out hungry and wrong because when they go to get their share, it's not there. We're talking about people who are really the hungry, the wronged, the homeless, the suffering. And I don't think it's entirely inappropriate that if there are people who have actually caused these hardships, that they should have to suffer somewhat in return. These are not just the abstract forces of history, but there may be people behind these forces. And there's only justice if there's some suffering involved. You may not know this, but in the Torah, there's a fairly radical change from other ancient codes of laws and that still exists today in many tribal cultures, Afghanistan, Pakistan, parts of Africa, parts of the Middle East and Arab countries. And the distinction is this. In Jewish law, property crimes cannot be punished with oppressing or hurting, causing pain to a person. So today, if you're in a bazaar in Pakistan and you steal something, you can get your hand chopped off. Can't have that in Jewish law. You can't actually physically hurt someone because of a property crime in which no person on the other side was harmed and oppressed or caused that suffering. Property, you are penalized with property. You have to pay reparations and more and penalties. Pain and suffering have to be paid with compensation, but not with lashes. Similarly, violent crimes or cannot be entirely expunged by paying reparations. There still has to be some suffering component involved. Today, that's not necessarily true in places like Afghanistan and Pakistan, as I mentioned, many tribal areas, and in the ancient world too, which is that a family of, let's say, a murder victim could be offered reparations to redeem the perpetrator from a prison sentence or from lashes. And of course, in a lot of ways, that makes a lot of sense. To give the family, the victim, the option of getting money rather than getting nothing and just having the other person punished makes a lot of sense. And yet it's not Jewish. Why? Because you can't have the rich be allowed to cause terrible suffering and have no justice, only get out of it by paying money. Yes, it may make practical sense, but it doesn't make moral sense. There has to be a moral balance in the universe. And that's what the drops are saying. The drops are saying there are people around oppressing us, and we care. We can't just sit in our homes, those who haven't experienced anti-Semitism, and fail to identify as a Jew with Jews who are suffering. It negates the suffering of Jews in history when we go to the easy, happier, humanistic explanation. I think of this every time I say the Aleinu at the end of the service. The Aleinu was a special prayer written by the early rabbis for Rosh Hashanah to remind us that God is king, because the theme of Rosh Hashanah is the coronation of the kingship of God, and God is king. And so the Aleinu prayer was written to have the high priest bow down, or then the prayer leader bow down and say, "We bow down to the true God." It got put at the end of services in communities in which oppression was actively experienced by our Jewish relatives. And they stuck it there because they said, you know, when we have no access to police protection and we don't have any redress for exploitation for members of our community kidnapped and for ransom by local authorities and potentates, and then we have to ransom them back. When you have no protection against tyrants and oppressors, it makes sense to end the service by saying, you know what the Aleinu says, which is, let's all bow down to God. And the middle part, all of the families and peoples of the earth who don't recognize God as the true king, they're going to be bowing down too. And we just can't wait. It's vindictive. It's a recognition of justice has to occur for those people who are oppressing us. I think that it is time that we recognize, as did the prophets of the Tanakh, that when the vulnerable are left to be exploited and to suffer, that such a society will experience cosmic retribution in which the innocent are punished along with the guilty. I know when I was extolling the virtues at services of this origin of the 10 drops, or sometimes 16 drops of wine as blood. You know, one person said, I admire them for saying it, I don't want to be part of a religion that celebrates the death of the firstborn. And I admire that. That's the other half of our Jewish soul that we have to hold on to and not lose, thank God. But there's still the other half, which is the prophets, the recognition that that's exactly what happens when people oppress and people starve others, and people exploit others. And without being called to justice, eventually such a society will fall. And as the curses in Deuteronomy at the end of the Torah say, such societies will fall. Their economies will collapse. The rich who thought that they were immune to poverty will experience terrible poverty. Those who made it so that others did not have enough to eat themselves will not have enough to eat. It's not an individual retribution. It is a cosmic communal retribution, but that's what the plagues were. They were an acknowledgement that the many who stood idly by and those tyrants who managed to oppress, that everyone got caught up in the failure of that society and the cosmic punishment coming from God. Because otherwise, Do I want the children of the countrywide CEO to have to grow up without a father because I'm saying their father should be in jail. I don't want that. I mean, I feel terrible for them. And I don't want any child to have to grow up without a father. But then again, I do think the countrywide CEO should be in jail because I think that when you've caused thousands, tens of thousands of people to become homeless, to suffer because they can't pay their medical bills because they're caught up in these financial instruments they don't understand. The rich have ways of declaring bankruptcy in ways sometimes the poor have access to, but often don't. That person had made a decision, in which case the justice involved is that, yeah, their child has to grow up without them because dad's in prison. And so I don't specifically want the child to suffer, but to some extent, is it just justice if they have to give up some of their bonus or some money? How could there be a consequence for that person without it affecting their family? So I think that as Jews, we trivialize the suffering of our relatives and of other Jews around the world when we don't allow the message of the Seder to penetrate us, where we don't summon the word we to feel the oppression ourselves of Jews today in Israel and elsewhere in Arab countries and Jews in Europe and as well as non-Jews who have been pushed to the point of being exploited economically, sexually, socially, morally, spiritually, and are crying out to God. That Jewish part of us must identify with that, and so that we hold in our hearts both the humanism of wishing no good, no bad to happen to anyone who's innocent, but hold in our hearts that we wish for a justice that the prophets also wished for.